Hi, I'm Ravi Agrawal, host of Foreign Policy Live. Each week, I sit down with world leaders and policy experts on the issues that matter most to you. Whether it's the U.S.-China relationship, the Israel-Hamas war, or the Global South's growing clout, Foreign Policy Live is your weekly fix for smart thinking about the world. Listen and follow us on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Democracy-ish. I'm Touré. This week in for the amazing Danielle is our friend Dr. Chrissy Greer, head of the political science department at Fordham University. Is that right?
Yeah, at Lincoln Center.
And you also have a podcast with my man Jason Johnson.
Well, Jason had to shift gears because he has another podcast coming out too. So we do have a podcast called What's In It For Us. It's through the Griot. I've been doing it. And this month we're going to have all women for Women's History Month to sort of fill in. And exactly. Then I also have that super wonky New York City focused podcast with Harry Siegel called FAQ NYC, where we've been interviewing mayoral candidates the past few weeks to try and figure out the direction of the city.
So the direction of the country, I think, was shifted a teeny weeny bit yesterday. Maybe not, but I mean, like, everybody's talking about Wendy Williams, like, coming out and telling Dr. Oz that she's not taking the vaccine and she don't care and she doesn't trust the science. And there's been a consistently solid 30% of Black people who have consistently told pollsters, don't want to take the vaccine, don't trust it. People throw out a variety of reasons that it was rushed. Who knows what's in it? We eat McDonald's, but we wonder what's in this vaccine.
Right. Now we want to know everything, right?
Right now we want to know. We drink yak, but we don't know what's in that vaccine. Oh my God. People reference the racist history of American medicine, which I'm like, yes, granted. And then sometimes they throw around the word Tuskegee, not knowing that in the Tuskegee experiment, the vaccine was withheld from people over many decades, not given to them. I mean, look, if they said, hey, Black people, you have a specific problem and here's the cure, I would be like, whoa, but this is for everybody. And the fear, the cynicism, the mistrust, the willingness to expose yourself and others who you know and others who you don't know to COVID rather than taking the vaccine, I don't understand. And the arrogance of Wendy's ignorance, I'm not taking it, I don't trust the science. I'm so disappointed on so many levels. I hate it here.
Well, so I think the arrogance of the ignorance is the theme, right? Because what really concerns me is Wendy Williams has a massive platform, not just with Black people, but with young people, with women especially. And we know that women are the leaders of their communities, no matter where we are, right? And for her to be so loud and so wrong, like loud, wrong, and strong, as your grandmother would say, right?
Loud
and
wrong.
And double down. When doctors are saying, you know, it's like, listen, no vaccine is perfect, right? There are margins of error, sure. However, what every single doctor who has gone to school, right, to study epidemiology, to study physiology, has said, taking this vaccine will exponentially make your life better compared to getting COVID. Yes, some people get COVID and they get chills and they're fine. Hey, guess what? There are a lot of people who get COVID and they die. Ask Herman Cain, right? Like, especially Black people. We know that it's disproportionate. So for Wendy, it's one thing if Wendy Williams says, I'm abstaining for my own, you know, health reasons. Now, mind you, now she also has elective surgeries consistently. So, like, that's a danger in and of itself. So, like, all of a sudden, you know, you're scared of doctors. It's like, since when? But if she says, I'm abstaining, that's my personal responsibility, that's one thing. But you can't be an advocate for anti-vaccination when you have millions of young people, millions of women, millions of Black people who listen to your every word, and you're not a doctor.
The personal responsibility or the personal route my body, my choice. I mean, look, nobody's forcing you to get the vaccine. However, we have to understand that the way vaccines work is that 90% of the community takes them, and that creates the barrier, right? That saves the community. If only 70 or 60% of the people take it, it's not going to be that effective. It's not going to be effective at all. So we all have to band together against
it's a collective action problem.
Yes,
this is what I teach the first 2 weeks of every intro to political science class that I've ever taught for the past 20 years. So you have free riders, people who are like, well, I'm not going to take the vaccine, but they're going to be the beneficiaries of herd immunity. But the problem is when you have too many free riders, you get a tragedy of the commons, and like all of a sudden the resources are either destroyed or overused or, you know, overutilized. And so this is where we are, where we have someone where, let's also be honest, Trey, Wendy Williams also has class privilege. So she's speaking from a place where, you know, she actually can have people come in and out of one of her homes and set things up and buy her groceries and clean her house and like do all the drive her around, whatever. She doesn't have to be on the subway. She doesn't have to be in the grocery store waiting in lines. She doesn't have to go to work to clean someone else's house. So there's this level when you see especially Black celebrities who are like, no, I don't believe it. It's like, well, first of all, open a book. That's one.
Right.
Two, you actually have more resources to talk to all the different types of doctors. And I put in the chat, my sister wrote an op-ed in the LA Times about vaccine hesitancy amongst Black healthcare workers, Black people who work in hospitals. And so the education process that we're doing, because like, let's also be real, like Black people have had horrible interactions with medical professionals in the past. And yes, Tuskegee comes up, but you know, we've had sterilizations. We've had the lead paint experiments from Johns Hopkins. We've had doctors ignore us. Serena Williams is like, hello, I'm one of the richest Black women in the world. Why aren't you listening to me? You
know, so like we respected. I get it.
Of course not. You know, and like no one trusts us. No one believes us. We get that. However, this is something where we have data. We are disproportionately dying. We are disproportionately hospitalized. We have pre-existing conditions. Yes, due to racism. Yes, due to all the things that this country has done to us. All those reasons should add up to the scientists. Black doctors are telling us this. They're not saying, ooh, we're all the Black people take Pfizer, all the white people take Moderna. They're not saying that. They're not saying that. You know, and even
we have to drill down on why we are getting the vaccine, why we are getting the coronavirus more than others, right? There's no medical reason. They're all social reasons, right?
Yes, social reasons.
We tend to be more these essential workers, right? These frontline workers in the medical fields, in the hospitality field. We tend to have healthcare less. We tend to live more in multi-generational homes.
We tend to live in places with worse air quality. So our lung capacity is already at different levels.
I also think about
hypertension, blood pressure issues.
All those pre-existing conditions that hit us more than others.
Because of racism.
Partly because of racism and partly because of the fear of medicine, which comes from racism. I understand that, but we can't be, you can't be stupid. I mean, like, I joke about, like, I'm not going to, you know, pick any continent, I'd rather die of a headache, because it's a funny thing to say. But like, if I was dying of a migraine, you're damn right, I would pick that little piece of cotton out of that Advil, out of the leaf, and take that shit and save my life.
Right.
You know, I drink water from a drinking fountain, because you know what? We have the right to do that now. We are our ancestors' wildest dreams, and we cannot live based on like a fear based on things that happened years ago. But, you know, I think about, it's not even racialized. I think about the wedding in Maine. This is like the most frightening story to me. That wedding in Maine last year, 177 people got it wedding. Seven people died. None of those who died attended the wedding. Mm-hmm. So your choices around this to not wear a mask, to not be safe, to not take the vaccine are affecting people who you know and people you don't know and may never see.
And who are trying to do the right thing, right? Like someone who ran to the grocery store with a mask on, but you know, has contracted it from someone who attended a wedding. Like they were doing the right thing, you know? And then you've got your governor of Texas who's like, you know what? We're 100% open for business. We don't care.
Well, from what I hear, Atlanta is 100% open for business and ready to party and ready to do their thing.
All-Star game, here we come.
I'm like, are we doing, is the All-Star game going to be a super spreader event with like big?
Yes.
I see people feel like, come to the club. I'm like, come to the club? Is this 2018? 2 months ago. What's happening?
This show.
From The New Yorker staff writer Vincent Cunningham, a keenly observed novel of a young black man searching for his place in the world amidst a moment of historic change. Great Expectations is about David's 18 months working for the senator's presidential campaign. Along the way, David meets a myriad of people who raise a set of questions. Questions of history, art, race, religion, and fatherhood that forced David to look at his own life anew and come to terms with his identity as a young black man and father in America. Inspired by the author's experiences working on Obama's 2008 presidential campaign, Cunningham uses a political campaign as his narrative backbone. Great Expectations will be one of the talked about novels of the year, Colm McCann. Great Expectations is available wherever books are sold.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
As part of the Pro Democracy Podcast Coalition.
The midterms are coming, and it's more important than ever that we protect and fix our elections.
We all know that our government is broken. Politicians spend more time working for themselves, their big donors, and their political party instead of for us.
We as Americans have had enough of the corruption, partisan bickering, and gridlock. Look, I get that all the nonsense makes you want to tune out, but I'm here to tell you there's reason for hope.
Our political system is broken now, but we can fix it. That's why we've partnered with Represent Us, a nonpartisan grassroots organization that has helped notch more than 160 victories to improve our elections and give power back to the voters where it belongs.
Right now, until November, there are many, many ways you can get involved. Represent Us is working in cities and states to pass good government policies like ranked choice voting. And they're also recruiting folks to help staff the polls.
Let's protect our elections now and for generations to come.
Visit represent.us/pod to learn more. That's represent.us/pod.
2 months ago, Bow Wow had a concert in Houston, and I can't stop talking about it. I'm like, someone has risked their lives to see Lil Bow Wow.
For
what
Bow Wow.
In the
not
world?
Beyonce. Like,
but here's the thing.
Bow
but
Wow.
Don't risk your life for Beyonce either. She's not
I know,
thinking
but
about
I can
you.
Understand. I could understand.
Why? No. No concert. Okay, fine. She's going to have
understand.
On cute outfits and crawl
Bow
on the ground.
Wow, I cannot
no.
understand.
No. Mm-mm. No, it's not worth it. Beyonce has enough concerts that you can watch on HBO.
You could watch Homecoming
you know
on Netflix. Right. You could.
Do that. Right. Don't risk your life for anybody. Because I was, you know, it was funny. I was debating with some friends. I was like, who would you risk your life to see? You know, and I was like, I so wish I would have seen Luther Vandross before he died. You know, someone was like, Prince. And I was just like, but I love these people. Don't get me wrong. But would I die to see Prince? No. Would I die to see Luther Vandross? No.
I mean, the Prince shows are pretty epic, but I see what you're saying. The to me, the immorality of Hollywood putting epic films into theaters and thus luring us, making us say, maybe yes. I should go see John David Washington in Tenet in a big screen. It would be kind of fun. I miss doing that. Mm-hmm. Like, we should not even have that option, right? Because we don't need that. Bow Wow.
Because if you give someone the option,
they're
going
to take it. Bow Wow should not be doing a concert. Just even for him to offer that is immoral, right? The other people who are offering that is immoral. Right. We shouldn't even have that option. I don't even understand the entire exchange of the arena, the promoter, the manager,
yes,
the star, everybody's
people.
Saying, let's
also,
do it. Nobody's saying, we're going to sue you for allowing us to have the chance to get the virus.
But we're not even talking about, like, don't you have to do sound check like all the ways, even before the concert, that you're interacting with people. Right. But we've also seen, it's not, and I'm not going to put this on the South. I won't put this on the South. But like younger people in general. And no, I'm actually not even going to put that on young people. Just people. Lots of folks don't know how to wear a mask. They think that the nose out, nose out is actually not wearing the mask properly, people. Mm-hmm. So I keep seeing, you know, in my neighborhood, there are a lot of brothers. Brother, a chin strap is not a mask.
It's not so just, when you're like, right, it's not just young people, it's older
it's
people.
It's not just young people, it's like, everybody.
I'm covering a PSA. My mouth, I'm just covering my chin, like,
The chin is killing me. And so the thing is especially when the older guys, you know, if I don't leave the house very often, but when I do, and they're like, you know, good morning, sis. I'm like, good morning, brother. Would you mind putting that mask on properly? And it's like, I can smize, as Tyra Banks has shown me, through my eyes. I have my mask on. And I'm like, put it above your nose, brother. And they're like, oh, thanks, sis. But like, I have to tell them to put it above their nose. Or the worst part is when they pull the mask completely off their face to talk.
To talk.
Sir, I can still hear you. I can still hear you through the mask.
The talking is the point. That's when you're supposed to, it's not wear the mask to get there. It's like a coat. Yes. And then I take it off when I get there. And now I'm taking it up to talk. I can hear you fine.
The thing. I saw LeBron James do it on the sidelines the other day while he was playing a game. He was talking to, you know, one of his teammates, and he put the mask on. So it's like, so the NBA is a farce, like all, you know, the bubble's gone. So I think that we have fatigue. It has been almost a full year. Totally. Like next week, I believe, like marks the year of like, where it's like, hey, sit down. Mm-hmm. Right. The last time I was on an airplane was March 10th. So, and that was, you know, I had to go to a funeral and I was like, ah. Seems like some things are popping off. And then, of course, like 2 days later, Fordham was like, all right, everybody, Zoom, here's your new Zoom code. Like, don't come back. So March 6th was the last time I was in my office. March 11th was the last time I was on the subway. Like, it's been a full year. And I think some people are like, they psychologically told themselves either a year or 6 months or whatever they told themselves. I told myself basically, like, get through a year because you know it's going to be at least three. Like, just get your mind right. Because at the time we had no vaccine, we're looking at bad behavior left and right. We knew that we had a maniac in the White House at the time. We have these Republicans who don't believe in science. We have Black, you know, thought leaders who were saying absolute nonsense. Mm. So I was like, we need to buckle up. It's going to be a long ride. But I think some people just have fatigue.
And I definitely.
Why?
How? I don't know. I didn't. And I don't have. The fatigue, probably because I don't totally mind. I mean, I'm a little bored, but I don't totally mind not seeing people.
I needed this slowdown. I tell you like, this. Much. I needed to slow down.
I'm good. I don't need parties. I'm good. But
I miss travel.
I know my wife is fatigued. I know she's fatigued and she's definitely like, I want to go see so-and-so. I want to go hang out with so-and-so. And I'm like, you know, there's a small group of women who she's very close to, who she's been seeing for 6 months, and I'm like, okay,
like, but then, in her like, pod
she wants to expand, and you know this vibe of like, you know, she's cool, right, she's clean, right, but she's smart, here's the she thing. Got it. I'm like, you what?
How do you know? I mean, so that's the thing about the pod, right? It's like, I think a lot of people are just like, just because I like Teray and Teray's a good person,
right,
doesn't mean that I know everyone who Teray sees. Exactly. You know, and so that means even you just spending 30 minutes talking to somebody, not me. You know what I'm saying? And so, like, listen, I have lost a friend because he broke the pod and I had to cut him off. Like, he said
you
that,
cut him
you know,
off
he was
like
in,
as a friend, or you're like, you're not in the pod.
No, as a friend.
You are not my friend anymore. When this is over, we will not be talking.
We are not talking now. Because when I lived with my dad, he's a close friend. I invited him to be in that pod with me and my family. Yeah. And it was my sister, the doctor, explained what it meant to be in a pod. My dad is at the time was 72. My mom is 72. So it's like, you know, if we're all going to be in this kind of Delaware, Philadelphia pod, these are the rules of the pod. And everybody agreed to the rules. Towards the end of us being in the pod, he lets me know that right before we entered into the pod, he broke the pod. Like he broke the rules.
He told you this later that, oh yeah, earlier before I entered, I broke it. So I really should never have joined it. and I put your
so 2 days before we entered the pod, 2 days before we entered the pod, I completely broke it, and then didn't tell you, didn't tell your family, and then came into the pod.
And so put your parents, especially parents, all of you, but your parents, your elderly,
I mean, I don't care about me, like my parents. So, I mean, you know me well enough.
And that was, and you're, so friendship over, we do not talk anymore. Goodbye. We don't, you're not.
Listen, I was like, maybe one day I'll come around. I'm not coming around just yet. So my family's like, listen, people make mistakes. We're healthy.
But
we're
there's
fine.
A lack of honesty.
And, but I'm
that.
Not fine.
The problem isn't the medical break. It's not like I slipped and went to the club accident. I'm sorry. I had to run to Barnes & Noble and get a book. Oh, my God. But, like, you knew what was expected of you. You knew you had transgressed that. And you didn't say, hey, I am not following the current guidelines. I should probably go. And, like,
and with this virus, it can sort of, like, hang out for a while before it gives the symptoms. So, like, you were just, so I, you know, my question was, I was like, so what if my dad had gotten sick? Would you have said something?
Police officer shot and killed a black woman in her own home.
Incident after incident, year after year.
Say Their Name, a podcast that focuses on the assault and killing of unarmed black people by police and in Stand Your Ground states.
I'm the mother,
father,
sister, uncle,
grandmother.
We were best friends.
We are humanizing these headlines, figuring out who these victims really were before the hashtags. Say Their Name. You can listen on the Acast app or wherever you get your podcasts.
The other virus that I want to talk about with you is the virus of white people, especially extreme white people. We had the FBI director talking about domestic extremism is metastasizing. So,
when you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.
From Foreign Policy, I'm Rina Ninen, the host of The Hidden Economics of Remarkable Women. Over the past few years, we've looked at how women around the world are changing societal norms to increase their economic power. This season, we're focusing completely on girls, how they're pushing for a brighter, more powerful future, and what the rest of us can do to set them up for success. Join us for stories about girl power, young women who are fighting for change, to give themselves a chance to live a life of their own choosing. That's season 6 of The Hidden Economics of Remarkable Women, wherever you get your podcasts.
Linking them to cancer right there. 1-6, and we should not
and black people are like, and water is wet. What else you got?
Well, we should not talk about 1-6 as a singular event because there were previous events of violence against government, against law enforcement by large groups of angry white people before that. I think about Michigan. There have been others. Perhaps we should link Gabby Giffords, the shooting of her in the head.
Charlottesville.
You know, Kyle Pulse. Rittenhouse. I mean, like, you know, what happened to Heather Heyer?
Dylann Roof.
I mean, like, so white violence, white politicized violence, people who are like, we are losing control of the country. They are getting in greater numbers than us. Because they all know in 2040, white people will not be the majority. Every white person knows that, like, off the top of their head.
They know that number.
Talking
like,
about that without even
mentioning. It's like their countdown clock.
Right. Their doomsday clock. And, you know, people who are leaning toward that way of thinking, are increasingly violent about the direction of the country. And I don't see this as anything abstract. I see this as a direct and tangible threat to my life, to your life, to the life of any, because there's, it's not just, we're going to go get a bunch of our friends and storm the Capitol. There has, for a long time, there has been an increasing number of white supremacists who are joining police forces. And the FBI talked about this over a
decade.
A decade ago. So the cop who pulls you over could be a Proud Boy, Klansman, just a white supremacist sympathizer, because you don't have to actually be in the group, right? It's not like you have a card and you're one of us now. Like, you could just be on the Facebook chats, like, yeah, see, Kyle, I'm down. Like, what's up? And like, and they've been telling them, join the police force so we can perpetuate our dominance. And I mean,
but you know who told us about this first? You know who first told us about the influx of white nationalists in law enforcement? It was our incarcerated citizens. They were the ones who were like, yo, just so you know, we are locked in these cages with these dudes. We've seen their swastika tattoos. We've seen, you know, their black babies with the noose around the neck. Like, that's a common corrections officer tattoo. They're like, we see all of this stuff. And so, yes. So our incarcerated citizens have been the ones who were like, y'all got a problem, because there's, you know, and we know that there's a link between law enforcement and people who are in the military. One of my mentees was in the military before coming to college. And he was just like, his roommate, you know, would read Mein Kampf, had, you know, like the German swastika flag, had the Confederate flag, all types of stuff in the U.S. military. And so we know when people leave the military, many of them go straight into law enforcement. So this has been a problem. You know, how many reports do we need? You know, how many task force are we going to have? We get it. You know, and there's, I think what's really important is there's also this global network. I mean, we're focusing on the domestic part. That is what happens. But like, you know, in Germany, you can't have a swastika. So they have the Confederate flag. They understand what that means. And so when you look at what happened on January 6th or, you know, in Charlottesville, there is a correlation between the Confederate flag and the swastikas, because that's a global conversation, you know? So even when we travel, like, blackness abroad, you know, I can't wait to get on a plane and go to Europe. You know, I love Europe. But it's like, we also have to just protect ourselves in a widespread community. Dylann Roof had the Rhodesian flag. Like, what does he know? He's from a trailer park in South Carolina. How did he get, you know, sort of radicalized? So like, clearly the internet is linking these white nationalists, not just in the United States, but across the world as well. I mean, so I think,
I mean, I know you stay in the house right now, but are you personally afraid of perhaps violence happening to you or somebody you care about, somebody in your extended friend circle, or just the chilling effect of this wave of violence, of folks saying, maybe, right? Because I think one of the lessons of 2020 for me was about taking the unapologetic blackness even further, right? And like, not caring about if I make white people uncomfortable, and like, be fully you, even more than you thought you were before. And a lot of black and brown people took that message from the BLM protests and were like, yes, like, we're going even further into our blackness, into our pride, into our unapologeticness about that. And this is the sort of typical response that happens, right? History's goes back and forth.
The pendulum.
Right?
Yeah.
And so here's the pendulum swing back. And are we going to say, maybe I should chill a little bit, right? Because I don't want to get killed. I don't want people around me to get killed.
Yeah, I mean, I can't live in fear. And I can't live in fear of what white people are going to think.
Hell yeah.
Right. You know, and the thing is, white people don't understand the capacity of white people. We do, as black people. We understand what white people are capable of. And I'm fundamentally aware of that. So it's like, yeah, you know, when we were pre-COVID days, right? Like, yes, Fordham Security is hopefully on it. Like, I've had many meetings with them, you know, like, they screen my emails and have to sift out all the nonsense. I do live in, you know, a city, so that makes me feel a little bit better. But like, let's be clear, January 6th was in a black city.
But some of the people who are tasked with protecting us are on their team.
Yeah, I know. But I mean, I think this is where, you know, I sort of have to just rely on like, I'm divinely protected from my, you know, by my ancestors. So like, that has to be part of it. Cause it's like, I can't live my life afraid to go out. I can't. You know, like, I mean, right now I don't go out much because
what are you talking about? You don't go anywhere. You are afraid to go out.
But you know, pre-COVID, I was out and about in these streets all the time.
But we see the impact of political speech coming down to the street with our Asian brothers and sisters right now, right?
Yes.
And a solid year of anti-Asian rhetoric coming from the president, coming from others on the right, linked with years of anti-Asian trust, right? Going back to Pearl Harbor in this country, if not further.
Yeah. And this idea of forever foreigner.
Forever foreigner has led to this moment right now of this sort of explosion of violence against Asian American people. And it's not that somebody has said get them, but somebody has said open season on them. This is their fault, and we see,
and there won't really be repercussions
all these different ways.
I think that's the thing that a lot of these white nationalists know. It's like there are hardly any repercussions. Think about the people on January 6th. I'm a vegan. I can't stay in prison. Okay. I have tickets.
Wait, he wasn't let out of prison for that. He just got the meal that he wanted, but he's still in prison.
Jail, actually, because no one's in prison.
Correct.
But like, there's so many who, you know, they're out on just bail, right? So it's like, yeah, I'll swing by. I mean, Kyle Rittenhouse, how many times can he break his bail and they still won't lock him up, right? Or the woman who's just like, I have tickets to Mexico. I know I went and, you know, participated in an insurrection, but can I go to Mexico? And the judge is like, okay.
Of all places.
Right. Build the wall, but I gotta go to Mexico.
I gotta let them come serve me. Them serving me is so exciting. You know, black people will forever talk about Dylann Roof got Burger King on the way to prison.
I mean,
we live in two different worlds. Dylann Roof got a burger on the way to prison.
Well, I mean, but here's the thing. It's like, so Jacob Blake gets shot in the back 7 times in front of his family. Yep. You know, George Floyd gets suffocated and murdered on camera in front of his child. They could have shot a 4-year-old baby. Like, but Dylann Roof, it's like, you know, they're like, you know what? You're probably not going to be out.
And you know what's disgusting?
9 people.
2 things with George Floyd that are disgusting me right now. Media calling it the George Floyd trial. He is not on trial. It is the Derek Chauvin trial. Make him famous. Right. It is not the George Floyd trial.
But I mean, but George Floyd is on trial, right? Because you have still, I mean, even some black journalists, you know, when Mike Brown was murdered, it's like, well, who is that black journalist who was like, well, he's no angel. I was like, show me an angel.
I mean,
please list the names and email addresses of all angels walking amongst us.
I mean,
sir.
Did the police know that he had done X, Y, and Z when they detained him? No, they did not. They were not operating on, you know, there's a felon who's doing something, please respond. No. A person had passed a counterfeit bill. Deal with that. That's all you knew. You were not executing him because he did time years ago. No, of course not.
I mean, we've literally seen
But now we see the right, which is consistently detached from reality, right? Which is so it becomes impossible to discuss anything with them because there is no relationship to reality whatsoever. The idea on the right now is George Floyd was high on fentanyl, and that's why he died. Not the knee to the neck. That cut off the air to his brain.
His post-COVID recovering body. But I mean, I think that's also the thing though. It's like what Audre Lorde said, you know, they'll kill us and tell us that we asked for it, you know, and we enjoyed it. I mean, I think sadly the Republican Party has turned into a party where can you reason with almost any of them? No. You know, I mean, the evening of January 6th, I mean, they are swift on the talking points. You got to give them credit. They are organized in their madness and nonsensical statements. But like the evening of January 6th, the widespread talking point was this was, you know, Antifa. More civil and more sane than Black Lives Matter protests that we saw all summer destroying our cities.
No. This is Antifa. That was the initial, right? That was the immediate retort. No, this is Antifa.
It wasn't even
our flag. And not really us. It's false flag, Antifa. Oh my God.
Really? A whole bunch of actors coming in beating cops with Black Lives Matter flags?
Right.
Or Blue Lives Matter flags? I mean, so I think, but here, I go back to my original point, which is this. White people fundamentally do not understand the capacity of white people. And in order for Black people to survive and, God forbid, thrive, we have to understand white people in ways that they will never know. And I think Democrats do not understand the full capacity of white people. They see the countertop, you know, the integration of like the diners, and they see the pictures of Ruby Bridges going to school and the Little Rock Nine, but they don't get it. They don't get the fact that like a grown man would murder a child in a church. They don't get the fact that a grown man would throw rocks and spit at a six-year-old girl trying to go to school. They don't get that they would like beat a woman to a bloody pulp because she's trying to get served at, you know, a meal counter at a Woolworth. Like, I don't think they have a cognitive dissonance as to what the capacity is of people who look like them to uphold white supremacy. And until they can see it the way we see it, the way we've experienced it, the way we felt it, to have words and fists hurled at us, to say nothing of bullets, we're not going to move the needle forward. Because I think a lot of folks are like, no, they'll come around. Win, sir. Because the Republicans are digging their heels in and doubling.
They are. And it's not going to get better with the loss of population dominance.
No.
I mean,
even though apartheid systems are possible. Like, let's be clear.
Sure.
We could still have a minority white population and have white folks still running the show. Like, we know what apartheid is.
I don't assume that 2040
right.
means that Black people will be just taking right. over Congress and taking over businesses.
Also, Teray, what we've seen, though, is you don't need white people for white supremacy. The same way you don't need men for patriarchy. White women and women do a great job upholding patriarchy, too. So it's like, you don't need, you know, Black
that
people
is such
to sort
an important
of like
point because
be an
anti-Black
person.
When Black people talk about Black people can't be racist, I understand what you mean. But also, there are plenty of Black people out here who are soldiers for white supremacy, perpetuating yes. white supremacy yes. from the Candace Owens to Herschel Walker's daughter, the son, to Diamond and Silk, to, you know, Herman Cain. Ben Carson. I mean, there are plenty of people out here perpetuating
white supremacy
is
and anti-blackness.
Is that not racism? How is that not racism? Because I don't want us to focus on interpersonal microaggressions. They hurt. We can wrap our heads around them. Fine. But we really need to think about the way systems function, the way white privilege and white supremacy functions to produce bias, to produce differences between our communities. And there are absolutely Black people who are part of perpetuating that system.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. And I think that there are a lot of good-meaning liberal white people who have made the change internally, right? But when it comes to changing systems, i.e. integrating their child's school, it's like, hey, that's a bridge too far. Right. I voted for Obama. Right. Like, look at what's going on the Upper West Side. You know, it looks like those debates look like you're in southern Mississippi. These parents are screaming to make sure that their five-year-old doesn't go to school with a Black kid from the projects across the street.
Right.
So it's like, but you voted for Obama twice and you would have voted for him a third time if you could, right? And you're just, you're the good one in your family that didn't vote for Trump. You voted for Hillary. You know, you've got all your pink hats and your knitting circles, right? We get it. But also when it comes to changing the institutions, when it comes to changing the systemic racism, all of a sudden we have a hemming and hawing and a NIMBY issue, not in my backyard,
right.
where it's like, well, we can do that over there. Integration is great in theory, right? Hiring talented people of color is great in theory, but not if it's, you know, at the expense of any inconvenience for me in my life.
Being nice to people, being open-minded to people, giving a big tip to the doorman at Christmas.
And telling all of your friends about it, by the way.
That is so lovely. And being open-minded when you see new forms of dance. But then I freak out because my property...
Did you say dance?
Yes, absolutely. But my property value may go down if the Jacksons move in here. So let's...
If Teray's child goes to my child's school, it's like now we have a quality conversation. I don't want the quality of education to go down. And it's like, what? Because a five-year-old from the projects is going to all of a sudden bring down the quality of kindergarten? First of all, anyone who's read a single book on education knows that if you have mixed level classrooms, that's best for every child. The super smart ones get to be sort of de facto teachers. You learn by teaching. That's just the way the brain works, especially the little brain. And then young folks get sort of extra supplemental education. And why are we assuming that the Black kid is actually going to be the one who's coming in with a deficit? So we're just assuming, we're assuming that Tyrone is automatically coming in with a deficit.
But also,
but like,
that
the white kid is just the brilliant one.
But that, and if you're looking at Tyrone or Keisha as they will teach my child about other cultures and other ways of being, so they will enhance my child's life. Like, well, that's problematic too. I'm not here to teach you and to be your tour guide into like another world so that you can feel better about yourself. I've had some Black experience because we met Keisha at school and got to know her, and like, I'm not here for you. I'm not here for you.
Well, I mean, but that's what I find so fascinating about, like, when they've done studies of asking white people, like, how, you know, do you have a Black friend? And it's like 40% of white people are like, yes, I have a Black friend. And then they, the follow-up question is, that Black friend can't be in your employ. And it like drops down to like 10%.
Well, right. How many Black people would either pick
like,
you
if
up
I'm on your
the,
payroll,
if,
I'm not your
would,
friend.
Would either pick you up from the airport or help you move. Like, that's friend, right? Like, would babysit your kid for free because we're friends. Like, that's a friend. Like,
But if you're paying me, of course I laugh at your jokes.
No, we're not.
If you're paying me, of course I'm available.
Right.
But like, that doesn't make us friends.
That's not the same. That's not the same. Oh my God. Such a mess. I hate it here. Thank you for listening to Democracy-ish. I'm Toure.
I'm Christina Greer.
Christina Greer. What did you say? Dr. Christina Greer. I like what the doctor.
I'm Dr. Christina Greer.
I made it all deep.
That's my Barbara Jordan voice. Dr. Christina Greer.
Rest in peace to the great Vernon Jordan, who of course is not related to Barbara Jordan, but an amazing person who just passed away, who was exuded dignity and class. I had the chance to meet him once, and he was a lovely person. But thank you for listening to Democracy-ish. Hopefully this country will be back next week.
Yeah. Well, we're getting there.